Okay. Let's, I'm not from Var or anything. There's plenty of people here, so let's see if we can try to have a net. This is the Barra Chestnut Ridge Technical Net. This is the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Technical Net. I'll be acting as net control. This is K2EIR. I don't have a preamble. What I recall Gordon saying is virtually any technical topic is open for discussion to be listed. And that we prefer that even if you're just going to be listening, that you do check in. So, without further ado, to quote the master, let's take call letters that begin with the letter alpha. Anyone checking in whose call begins with the letter alpha, please call K2EIR now.
K2EIR. This is AE2K. How you doing, Howie? This is Eric. And just standing by. I'll chime in if I hear something that I have knowledge of.
Very good. Thank you, Eric. And now it comes back to me that we'd like you to list whether you have a question, a comment, or none of the above. Probably is another choice. So I'm going to list you, Eric, as none of the above. Is that correct?
That is correct. Back to you, Matt.
Very good. Any other amateurs with the prefix of A on their call letters? Nothing heard. We'll go over to the kilos. Just plain kilo twos, no KD2s. Just kilo twos. Any kilo twos? This is K2EIR for the Barra Chestnut Ridge Technical Net.
Okay, K2EIR. This is Jim, K2ZO. And I have a question. Working on a printer here, and I've got a kind of question for any printer expert. Back to net, K2ZO.
Roger, Jim. We have you listed with a question. Thank you for checking in. Any other kilos? Here is K2EIR.
K2GFM. K2EIR, I've got a question. This is Greg. Sorry, I said that backwards. And I also quickly wanted to relay that Gordon did respond to me, and he is taking the next 2 weeks off, and I was hoping somebody could run the net tonight, and he's glad to hear that you're doing it.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Yeah, actually, Gordon's asked me many times, and I've declined. So he finally has had his way with me. Okay, thank you, Greg. By the way, so far I have AE2K, K2ZO with a question, K2GSM with a question. Okay, any other kilos?
I'm sorry, this is KC2WDJ. I've never done a net, nor do I'm not even really sure what it is, but are you asking anybody with a K in their call sign?
Okay, I was looking for kilo twos, but that's okay. We're going to open it up to any kilo, KC, KD, KD. So I have you down, KC2WDJ. That's Walter, is that correct?
That would be correct. My name is Walter. I'm in Orangeburg, New York. I have a question. Actually, Paul, I believe, at 2K was telling me about you guys in ERA. I'm actually kind of looking.
Okay, Walter, we'll get to that in a little while. First, we're going to get all the check-ins. I should disallow. I'm not a member of Barra. I have checked it frequently here to the net. I enjoy Gordon and all the guys, and I've gone to some of the events they've had, and I already belong to a couple of clubs and repeater associations, and it's a limit to how far I can spread myself. But we have great guys here, and we're going to see if we can get a few more great guys or gals to check in. Thank you for your check-in, Walter. So any more kilos, could be kilo Bravo, could be kilo Alpha, could be kilo Charlie. Any kilos, this is K2EIR, acting as net control for the Barra Chestnut Ridge Technical Net.
Hey, dude. D-I-R, K2-D-I-R, Kilo Delta 2 Foxtrot Tango Alpha, Oak Ridge, New Jersey. Good evening.
Okay, KD2FTA, we have you in Oak Ridge. I need to know whether you have a question, a comment, or none of the above.
Roger, roger. None of the above. We're just supporting the net and listening in this evening. Hopefully we'll learn something. KD2FTA, back to net control.
I almost always learn something when Gordon runs the net. Just give me your name, please.
Roger, roger. Alex in Oak Ridge. KD2FTA, back to net control.
Thank you, Alex. By the way, let me also say that per the procedure Gordon has established, we'll take Echolink later. So even if you have one of these calls, we'd like to take Echolink separately. Everybody should be aware that Echolink requires a little bit more of a lag, a little bit more standby before one responds and before they are able to key up. So we'll treat that a little bit separately to allow them to clearly check in. Okay, I've still got kilos. Any kilo, any call letter beginning with the letter K, call K2EIR now.
K2EIR, KM4GHN, Dobbs Ferry, New York, none of the above.
Roger, and you got to refresh me on your name.
I usually forget something, but my name I don't, Mitch. Thanks.
Roger, Mitch, thank you. And by the way, for everyone's info, my handle is Howie, H-O-W-I-E. Okay, we're still in the kilos. Any other kilos, anybody's call beginning with kilo, call K2EIR. If they heard, we'll be able to move on from here. Once again, this is the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Technical Net, which meets here every Thursday night on 146955, or most Thursday nights. You can find past nets. You can listen to them on the internet, I think at amateurradio.tv. You can do a search for the MP3 files, which you can play. Let's move on to November's. Anybody's call beginning with November who wishes to join the net, please call K2EIR now. Unusual, but true, or maybe I should say unbelievable, but true. So far, no November's. Okay. Any whiskeys? Anybody's call beginning with whiskey, please call K2EIR.
K2EIR, this is W2PDQ, Richard in Clifton, New Jersey.
Good evening, Richard. Do you have a question, a comment, or nothing, none of the above?
Howie, I just have a quick comment. I don't know if anybody's interested, but something I discovered on the internet. Back to you, Howie.
Roger, Richard. We'll get to that in a little while. I also want to remind everybody that it's okay to list items for sale or wanted that are surplus to you. You know, you're not in the commercial business like Ham Radio Outlet. You can list those two to specify. Any other whiskeys for the net? This is K2EIR.
Good evening, Howie. This is Jim, WA2UMP. In Pearl River, and just listening this evening.
Very good, Jim. I heard you earlier, and I had a senior moment on your handle. I need that reinforcement. Very good evening to you. Okay, we're moving right along here. Any other whiskeys for the Barrett Chestnut Ridge TechNet?
This is Whiskey 2 Japan Echo Kilowatt, Don, with a comment. Over.
WA2QBC, Bruce, no traffic.
Okay, just refresh me, WA2QBC, with your name.
Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce, and we acknowledge W2JWK, Don. Very good. And we'll move right along. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey
Charlie, November. This is Rick over in Bloomingdale.
Fine business, Rick. We have you. And I assume you do not have a question or a comment. Is that correct?
No question or comment. I just realized the TechNet was going on, and I jumped on, and I got the time to stay on tonight. So just listening in for the moment. Maybe something will come up later. Back to you.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, Gordon apparently can't make it tonight or for a couple of weeks, and spontaneously I have volunteered. And we want to remind everybody, Gordon's policy, we encourage you to check in even if you have nothing. What almost invariably happens is some item comes up for discussion and you may want to chime in, and this way you're already on the log to get an idea of who's here. I can publish it for Gordon, and it helps. So we thank all of you for your support. I thank Gordon for running an interesting net almost every week. You're a great bunch of guys. Let's move on. Any other whiskeys for the net?
Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy.
Okay, Randy. I didn't quite get your call, and I should know it by heart, but just pause a moment before you start with that powerful audio of yours.
Yes, it's Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Washington Township, and just listening this evening.
Roger, Randy. Yeah, Gordon has explained that you use a compressor and sort of a power mic. It's always obvious, very fully modulated. Come in. Okay, for the call that sounds like U.S., I'm sure that's why you selected it. Thank you, WU2S. Any other whiskeys for the Barra Chestnut Ridge TechNet? This is K2EIR.
Whiskey Echo 2 Romeo, WE2R, Charlie, just listening.
Thank you, Charlie, for checking in. Any other whiskeys?
WI2W, Steve, with a comment.
Roger, Steve. Okay, any other Ws? Okay, I don't know what else. We'll just go open for any other call letters before we turn to EchoLink. Anybody wishing to check into the Barra Chestnut Ridge TechNet, please call K2EIR.
K2EIR, N2NBR. And here is John. QTH is Northern Westchester County. We have about 2 feet of snow on the ground altogether. I don't really have anything. I may chime in if I have something to contribute. Back to you. Howie.
Roger, John. Very good. Any other stations for the Barrett TechNet? And again, EchoLink, please stand by. We're going to get to you very shortly.
Kind of late, Howie, but this is AC2T. I spoke to Gordon yesterday, and he told me to check in and give my spiel.
Okay, well, if you want to give a spiel, should I put you down for an announcement or a comment?
If it's an announcement, Howie, I'll say it that way. So anyway, it's AC2T. The name is Paul.
Yeah, I wouldn't forget your call, Paul. AC2T acknowledged. Okay. One more standby for regular stations that is not EchoLink. Any call letters? This is K2EIR.
K2EIR. This is KC2WDZ, Kilo Charlie 2, Whiskey Delta Zulu. This is Dean, Rockland County, New York.
Fine business, Gene. Do you have a comment, a question, an announcement, or none of the above?
I'll say I have a question. Thank you.
Very good. We have you listed for a question. Once again, any call letters, not yet EchoLink, any other stations for the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club TechNet? contact GoLink. Those poor folks have been waiting a while. And then we'll return for anybody from any place. Okay, any stations on EchoLink, please call K2EIR now.
K2EIR. Please copy November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu N2, VH, Z name is 10 Kilo Echo November. QTH is Alliance, Nebraska, and I have no traffic for the net, just listening. Back to net.
Roger, Ken. N2VH said we have you checked in. Thanks for joining us. Any other stations on EchoLink? Nothing heard. This is K2EIR, the Kilowatt 2 Echo India Romeo, with the Barra Chestnut Ridge Technical Net. Any stations from anywhere, any call letters who wish to check in that haven't already done so, please call me now.
KD2CWW.
Okay, we have KD2CWW. Is that Chris? You're challenging my memory.
Yes, it is Chris in Hawthorne, and I'm just listening.
Gotcha. Okay, welcome to the net. Any other stations for the net? Nothing heard. Okay, I'm just counting up. So far, including myself, we have 20 stations, and a few of them have questions. What I'd like to do is try to follow what Gordon does. I believe Gordon usually goes to W2JWK Don, who usually has some comments and announcements combo. So we'll go to him first, and since I know that Paul has an announcement, we'll go to him next, and then we'll continue from the top of the list in order of check-ins. So, excuse me, I have a little throat problem here. W2JWK to get it. This is K2EIR.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody. This is W2JEK, Whiskey 2, Clear Echo Kilo. Barra's next VE test session will be March 27th. March 27th, Friday night at 7 o'clock, Digital High School. Coming the test $50. An ID with a photo on it, like a driver's license or a passport. Or two forms of non-photo ID. If you have a license, please bring your license and a photocopy of the license if you're upgrading. And if you are taking a test, you will either need a Social Security number if you do not have a license, or an FRN number, which on your license. Now, if you don't have a license, you can get the FRN number, whatever your security number is, of commercial radio calculator you may, but there can be iPods, etc., not be used as calculator. License is expired beyond 2 years, then the general advanced and extra class can get back into ham radio technician exam. Be advised that the current general class exam change at first, so now get into the test. Not try to use the stuff on the old back to that W2JEK.
Roger, Don. I'm sorry about the callers. I should know better. Thank you. I have a question. I haven't kept up with all the volunteer exam changes since I was licensed a half century ago. How often may someone take the test? And I'm asking because I know there are listeners out there, even if they're not people who've checked in. And I'm sure that there are people who want to get a license, and they may be anxious or whatever, and I think it helps to know that you can take the test again and again till you pass. So how quickly after taking the test, if one should not pass the first time, can you take it again?
Okay, well, we could do a retest at the same test session to give you a different exam. There we usually have about five different versions of the exam. Five technician extra class. We have five different versions of each exam. But I don't recommend it for somebody that hasn't studied and going to spend another $15 and throw it away. But if you start and you're close to the passing and you want to try again, that's fine. You don't have to wait 30 days like in the old days when I failed my novice code test in 1951. I had to wait 30 days back. Well, I came back and I passed the code test and a few tests as well. Back to net, W2JK.
Roger, Don. And one more question. How, because I haven't been paying attention, how often do you give these volunteer exams? So, again, if there's someone who doesn't pass on one session and they don't want to take it again that night but want to come back another time, how close part are exams typically given by you, or what? Do you identify the group again that's sponsoring this?
Okay. Ara, and I give, sir, one in each month. I say we'll have another one in April, Friday night, May 30th, I believe it is, Campfest, that's a Saturday between the VA. Up for the summer because we have three in September, October, November. That's generally what we do. Now, Gordon sometimes runs a tech class in December, and sometimes we'll help him out. Ara function, but it's the Barra gang that does the test. Now, Fairlawn Club, people in North Jersey, and... Right at the beginning, it says popular, you click on exams, and you have a 2,500 miles, and you just click on that, and search, and they'll give you exams. So that's the exams are being held. Back to that, W2J.
Once again, thank you, Don. And I know there are other people, for example, AC2T, who are also volunteer examiners and give exams here in Westchester. So if you are a listener and really want to get an amateur radio license, there are plenty of people around who want to help you, and there definitely are ways to get your license. So again, we thank the groups, the radio clubs, for their efforts, for volunteering and doing what they do to help people get licensed and join a wonderful hobby and service. Okay, without further ado, Paul, you had an announcement, so I'm going to put you ahead of the rest of the queue of people with comments and questions, AC2T, and we're going to stand by right after Paul for any late check-ins. AC2T, this is K2EIR, and this is the Barra and the Chestnut Ridge TechNet.
K2EIR and the group AC2T. Fly business there, Howie. And, well, my announcement is just the same as Don's there. We do have VE sessions. We do it every Saturday in our club at Armark. We do have six stations that are set up. And after the VE session, we do demonstrate and teach people how to get on the air and even get on the air and let them make some contacts. But we do have it every Saturday at 12 o'clock noon. And if you want to register, you just have to do it the Westchester ARC at rive.com or call 914-907-6482. That's Mike's number, and he will sign you up for it. And we do it every Saturday at 12 o'clock. And like I said, we do have stations set up so that if you come early, we can give you some demonstrations. And after the test, you can sit down and possibly even operate and learn how to operate correctly. This is what we like to do and like to teach. And like I said, it's Westchester ARC at live.com is the email, and 914-907-6482 is the phone number, and just call that or drop a line on email and you'll get an answer back right away, giving you the directions and exactly what we do. So back over to you, Howie. K2EIR for Charlie 2 Tango.
Now, this is K2EIR. Thank you, Paul, for your announcement. And again, my thanks, and I'm sure many people's thanks, to the sponsoring clubs and all the volunteers who make this possible. And again, if there's a listener out there who's wondering about ham radio, even if you're not ready to take your test and become a ham, you might want to go to one of these sessions and find out, like Paul's offering, to see a station in operation. Find out if this hobby and service is meant for you. And mine really is. Okay, thank you. All right. We need to take a standby for any stations that now would like to join the net that aren't checked in or change their listing if they now have a question or a comment. This is K2EIR.
We go right through the summer. No, you know, every Saturday.
Roger, Paul. And once again, thanks. Any other stations for the net?
Howie, I've got to want to change my comment to an announcement. This is Steve, WI2W.
Steve, okay. In keeping with my policy, or what seems to be net policy, we're gonna prioritize announcements ahead of everybody else. So, Steve, go ahead with your announcement.
Okay, thanks, Howie. My announcement is that the Bergen Amateur Radio Association is going to hold their spring auction on March 15th. That's a week from this coming Sunday at 12 o'clock at the Westwood Junior Senior High School. For details, you can go to our website, www.barra.org. Sellers can come in at 12 o'clock and buyers come in at 1 o'clock. There'll be food. There's no cost to attend. So mark it on your calendars. It's always a fun time. We have a great group of folks that show up and lots of tables with stuff. So hope everybody can make it. And back to net. K2BAR, WI2W.
Good, Steve. Thank you for your announcement. Okay, another standby. Anybody who wishes to join the net or change their listing, K2EIR here.
K2EIR. I am listening.
Okay, Bob, I didn't quite get your call written down. I'm running a little slow mentally. I got KC2, I think D. Could you give me the full call?
That's Kilo Charlie 2, Foxtrot Mike.
For KC2 ZFM, thank you. And did you say you had a comment, a question, or none of the above?
That would be none of the above at the moment.
Very good, Bob. Okay. Yeah, we find, folks, most of you have been in here before, but if you're new, and I know Walter is, we find we often change. We get excited about what somebody else has said, and so now we do have a comment or a question, and we welcome people to jump in. We try to do it on a topic basis, and that seems to work well. And our nets seem to run a little bit long, but they're always fun for both, usually, for those who stick it out and stay as long as you want or as short as you want. All right, we have a question from K2ZO about printers. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, W2EIR, K2EIR. Actually, you could use K2BAR. I'm the trustee for it. So next time, go ahead. Anyway, the question that I have is I'm working on an HP printer, and the problem with it is I have a bad print head. Now, I have purchased a new print head. I don't have it yet. But if any of you have ever set up an HP printer, one of the first things you get is a startup set of ink. I'll drop a second. Okay, now that startup set of ink is usually used with a first-time printer when you turn it on, and never been used before, and off you go. Well, since I'm going to be putting a new print head in, basically this is what I'm doing. I'm going to be starting up from the beginning. Now, I know the startup ink is usually in cartridges that don't have a whole lot of ink. You need to go buy, you know, real ones. But one of the things that it says in the instruction book is that you must use the startup ink first. And for the life of me, I can't understand why, unless there's some kind of a different cartridge or a different thing in the chip that's in the cartridge or whatever. And I'm just wondering, is that really true? Because I don't know if the outfit that is sending me this new head is going to send me a set of the startup cartridges. They're actually marked for first-time use. And just wonder what if that's just hype from Hewlett-Packard, or is there some logical technical reason that you need to start it up with those cartridges? Anybody know? Back to that, K2ZO.
Okay, Jim, I have to confess I don't know, so let's open it up to our group. This is K2EIR with the Barra Chestnut Ridge Technical Net. Anybody wish to respond to Jim, please throw out your call.
W2LCN.
Okay, we have W2LCN. Let me just get a list going. Anybody else, just give me your calls and I'll take you in order to respond to Jim. Okay, we'll start with Rick, and I'm sure after he said something and Jim said something, there'll be yet another person who wants to chime in. Go ahead, Rick, W2LCN, K2EIR.
Hi, guys. One thing I saw, and I've worked with different printers throughout the school over and over again, never had any real issue with which ones you started first or whether they were sitting in a box or whether they were part of a different package. But one thing I did see, and I learned a little bit more about it, through some frustration, is that a while back they had a little chip inside the print head that would somehow work with the timer on the computer or something vice versa that would keep track of the time and literally give you a slow period of time that you could use these. If you didn't use the ink, it would not no longer continue to work. And I've had plenty of ink cartridges that have not been used very much and died out prematurely. And I have other ones that I have used excessively, and they have died out through a loss of ink. And they physically are lighter in weight than the other ones. But, yeah, I don't think you'll have any issue with running one as opposed to a different one with the print head. But I'm not too sure, but I haven't seen too much that has any problem. My biggest problem is running out of the ink, especially on the inkjet printers, running out of time first before anything else. I think there was even a lawsuit about that that said some aftermarket company was making them with the chips nulled out, and they were sued, and they said it's part of the packaging, part of their process to have a chip that has a timer. So let me send it back to Net, W2LCN, back to KQBAR.
Thank you, Rich. Jim, do you want to respond?
Okay, very good. Thank you for your comments, Rick. This is K2ZO. Yeah, I have used aftermarket Chinese cartridges in HP printers. And what happens is that my printer says, hey, this is a counterfeit, you know, but it doesn't stop me from using it. Now, I know you can buy cartridges that you want to refill, if you want to do that, with a chip in them that allows it to be refilled forever. Apparently, it doesn't have that timer function that some of them do. And yes, some of them actually can be reset. They used to make a gadget that could reset them. But what confuses me is the fact that they say you have to have a startup set of cartridges, otherwise you're going to have error messages. This is exactly what it says right out of the book. And I can't figure out what kind of error messages or whether they're going to stop you from using. If you get an error message and you just say ignore it, fine. But I'm a little confused. But and I do know that every time you get a new printer, you get these startup cartridges, and they say, you got to use this. Don't put regular cartridges in first. So I don't know. And I'm at a loss to figure it out. So anybody has any other ideas, I'd like to hear them. Back to Net, K2ZO.
Yeah, why don't you call the folks that are selling you the printhead or email them and ask them if there's going to be any issues. They would know, I would think.
They don't speak English.
AE2K with a comment.
WA2QBC comment.
Okay, let's start with Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just did a Google search and found in the HP tech that it said that the first time you set up and use the printer, you must install the ink cartridges that were shipped with your device. The ink in the cartridges are specially formulated to mix with the ink in the print head assembly. That's what the reason you have to use that initial cartridge.
Okay. Who else did we have with the AE? Well, I missed it. The other station.
WA2QBC. Jim, I sent you an email with the link I found on the web, and it talks about something about having special ink in the printhead that mixes with the ink in the startup cartridge. I don't understand what they're trying to communicate. I guess there's some thinner or something when they ship the new printhead. Anyway, there's more information there and also a number to call tech support at HP if you're curious about obtaining a startup cartridge. And it does throw error messages depending on the printer.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Jim, any further comments?
Okay, well, it's interesting. I have, I don't know if you know how one of these things works, but the ink cartridge dumps ink into the head assembly. And the head assembly has a very, very fine filter grid or whatever where this ink dribbles down into. And then it goes to the head that actually electrostatically fires it down onto the paper. A pretty unique little thing. And of course, when you take one of these things apart, the head pops out. There's a lever on it. You can pop the head out. You can clean it. I've cleaned them and rinsed them with alcohol to clean them out when they've dried up and actually resurrected a few printers that sat for years on a shelf. But the startup ink might have, maybe, I don't know if it's a thinner, it doesn't look, it does look, if you look at the cartridge, I remember that it appeared to be much, much thinner in viscosity, you know? So I don't know, maybe what they want to do is fill that other printhead or something, but it confuses me. And of course, you can't believe anything that Hewlett Packard says. They'll tell you, no, you can't use anything but our stuff, and you got to do it our way. So I really was looking for a technical answer because I don't know. My question is I've got a set of regular cartridges, and if I put them in to this new head, the head assembly is also the tray that holds the cartridges, and if I put them in this new head, I don't want to screw it up. Because I paid $20 for it, and that was the reason for my question. So, as I said, if I know if I call them, they're going to tell me, no, you can't do it. But I'm just wondering if there really is a good reason. So perhaps there is. Perhaps it's a different ink, which, again, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But that's the way it is. Back to net, K2ZO.
Okay, very good. Anybody else want to comment on this topic? K2EIR. Okay, I think we can close out that one. All right, next on the list with a question is K2GSM. Greg, go ahead.
K2EIR, this is K2GFM. Thank you. My question for tonight is sort of a survey question, sort of a looking for a discussion, so hopefully we don't take up too much time here, but I'll throw it out there anyway. And I'll do it in two steps. First, I'll do the preamble. I'll pause, let the repeater reset, and then I'll ask the question. So this is around repeaters and repeater tones, the PL, the CTCS, CTCSS, and DCS. So what I'm new, relatively new to ham, started back up in November, so I'm still learning this stuff. What I've discovered so far is that most repeaters seem to use some form of tone. It looks like a tone is generally referred to as the transmission tone that the sending receiver sends to the repeater, as opposed to the receiving tone. It looks like CTCSS sort of implies the receiving tone. So in other words, the radio receives the tone from the repeater and opens the squelch. And DCS seems to be the same sort of thing, except it's a digitally encoded tone as opposed to a subaudible tone. And it also seems like, in terms of DCS, there doesn't seem to be the corresponding CTCSS version of DCS. It seems like there's just DCS, which is both transmit and receive. I'm going to pause here.
Let me just jump in, Greg. It might help to call these input frequencies and output frequencies. That is, the repeater has an input frequency and an output frequency, and it's really clearer to refer to it that way. I don't know if that helps. K2EIR.
Yep, fair enough, it does, and I've used that terminology, and depending on who you're talking to, some people get it, some people don't. So I'll go ahead with that, because that makes the most sense to me. So my experience has been, when I'm in the car driving around, I've downloaded to my radio a bunch of repeaters that from, like, repeaterbook.com and reference radio, radioreference.com, and by default they have just tone set, which essentially sets the repeater input tone and not the repeater output tone. So your radio is essentially transmitting that tone. And the problem is that there's a lot of intermod, especially around the New York City area. I get taxi cabs, TV stations, whatever, and the intermod is broadcasting, or it's coming across on the receive frequency for the repeater. Sorry, let me say that again. It's coming on the receive frequency for the radio when you're listening to the repeater. So it will be the transmit side of the repeater. So my question is what's the best way, and I guess let me step back again. I've noticed that I can, in general, set my radio to CTCSS instead of just regular tone with the same code. But in order to do that, I'd need to test to see whether or not the repeater is actually transmitting the appropriate tone. And what's the best way to test for that without, you know, sitting there with two radios and keying up the mic, keying up the repeater, and scanning for the tone? And second, why would a repeater not set their transmit tone to be the same as their input tone? I guess let me stop there and just open it up.
Okay, Greg, let me just stand by for a moment. This is K2EIR. Let me just make sure I've got it clear. Okay. As net control, I'm going to grab the first comment on this. and I have to confess, I'm a little confused. I don't know if this helps clear the air for you or anyone else, but most rigs can, let's separate the issue of intermod. Most rigs have a menu setting that basically controls a preamp. Different manufacturers give it different names, and maybe as people go through, they can recall what some of the names are. One that comes to mind is something like Intercept Point or something like that. I'm trying to remember what my Kenwoods call it. But you can reduce intermod by one of those settings, and sometimes it's confusing whether it's on or off, but basically you want to turn the preamp off, and that can help. And also on the intermod front, there are filters you can buy that go on your radio, but of course they're a bit expensive and can be a bit tricky, but if you need it, you need it. And of course also on intermod, some radios are better than others. Okay, leaving that aside, as far as tones, you can transmit tone and not require a tone on receive, or you can require a tone on receive, so that instead of a noise squelch, you have a tone squelch on your transceiver. And some transceivers allow you to use different frequencies on transmit and receive, and some don't. Okay, where it comes to repeaters, and let me let this reset. Repeaters may or may not transmit a tone, of course, that if they do, it allows you to set your squelch to a tone squelch, so it's convenient that way. Whether they use the same output tone as the input tone depends on the repeater operator. As a general rule, it's a lot less confusing if they do. That is, transmit the tone they expect to receive. In other words, on this repeater, I think it's 143 point something or other. That's what's required at the input of the repeater. They would also transmit that on the output. And I don't even recall what the case is with this repeater. that's another factoid I'll throw out. I don't know why some repeaters do have different output and input tones. I don't know if that's to throw you off, to be confusing, whether they've forgotten, but it does exist. If anyone knows a special reason for it, I'm sure they're going to speak up. Okay, so I've grabbed the first answer to you, Greg. Let me turn it back to you for any comments before we go on and open it up to everybody else to respond to you. The one benefit of being net control is I could do this. Back to you, Greg, K2GSM from K2. I'm going to get tongue-tied over my old call. This is K2EIR.
K2EIR, this is K2GFM. Yeah, thanks. No, I appreciate that. I'm basically going to turn it back to the net for further comments. I just wanted to say that when the repeater transmits the code, it's up to the receiver whether or not they listen to it and use it or not, right? And I think that if radioreference.com is any indication of what the current practice is, people ignore the repeater's transmit code and just have it open on the on their rigs. And I've actually gone back to a lot of the repeaters I have stored in my memories and have, and I don't know if I should say this over the air, but keyed the mic, scanned the code, and if the code is the same, I set it to CTCSS, and it's significantly reduced the open squelches that I've gotten from interference. By the way, in my car, I'm actually using an HT, so it's only a little 5-watt Kenwood THD72A, I think is the model number. So I'm not sure I have a feature to play with the Intermon stuff. I'll definitely investigate that. But, you know, again, my question is why wouldn't you set the code to be the same on the transmit from the repeater's perspective? And just curious, just looking for some insights. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. And one more comment. Besides Intermod, there is adjacent channel interference. So these 15 kilohertz splits often cause a problem. This repeater in particular, I have a problem with other adjacent repeaters. And partly that's because if your actual deviation is a little bit more than 5 kilohertz, which is supposed to be the standard, the actual bandwidth the signal takes up is something like 18 kilohertz, which is more than the 15 kilohertz channel separation. So that's why you sometimes get that. And indeed, a tone squelch on your receive end, on your transceiver, will help. Okay, let's open it up. I know you're very anxious, Greg, to hear everybody else's opinion. So people who would like to respond to Greg's question, please list your call. This is K2EIR.
UBC,
anybody else? Okay, Bruce, you've got it.
Hey, K2BAR on the group W82QBC. I'm going to go from memory and dating back quite a bit. I learned this stuff as TL, private line tone. And the idea initially was your transmitter would send the tone. And if the repeater did not hear the tone, it would not key itself and it would not repeat your audio out on the output side of the repeater. And the problem that solved way back in the early days was multiple repeaters would all be on the same frequency. They'd be in the same general geographic area. That way, by specifying different tones, you could use one repeater on the same frequency or a different repeater on the same frequency and go from there. And that's where some of these tones came from initially. And they were initially used in the old days as a way of excluding people from using the repeaters. The early ham repeaters were almost always open. And then they had private repeaters, and those mostly required TL tones. And a lot of the radios at the time didn't have TL capability. Let me let it drop. Okay, then various other things. Now, those tones were all standardized tones. They come in specific frequencies. You don't have to worry. Just pick the correct number that corresponds to the repeater. I run my radios mostly as transmit tone. CTCS stands for Continuous Tone Coded Squelch System. And basically, I needed to key up the repeater. Now, the repeater could output a tone. And again, if you've got two repeaters on the same frequency,
and you only want to listen to one of them, you could set your receiver to listen to the tone of that repeater on the output side of the repeater. And as you figured out, the repeater could simply repeat the subaudible tone that it received, or it could create a subaudible tone on a different frequency. And the idea is you can identify that repeater and it will break the squelch on your radio. There are tone burst systems for doing the same thing. There are digital code burst systems that do the same thing. But mostly in the ham world, it's mostly TL or CTCS as you're calling it here.
Let me chime in that one of the reasons in the early days of TL called that was that sometimes it the extended propagation, particularly on 6 meters or on commercial frequencies that were lower down. And so when there was extended propagation, you might get a distant repeater, and you didn't really want to have that confusion. So by assigning TLs to it, you pretty much guaranteed you'd only get the repeater you were interested in, your local repeater. Police certainly had that problem. Okay, anybody else want to respond, including Greg's acknowledgement or whatever? This is K2EIR.
November 2, Victor Hotel, Zuluenta VHZ.
Okay, Ken, N2VHC, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on? We're doing good out here in Alliance, Nebraska. And what I wanted to say is TL tone was the Motorola trademark for private line, and the CTCSS is exactly the same, but that's the generic term for that, in case anybody's confused. What I wanted to also add to was that he had mentioned, the gentleman said that he had an HT in his car that was getting intermod and so forth, I believe. Big problem I realized a long time ago is when people have HTs and they jack them into gain antennas, anything outside of a car, let's say even a unity gain like a quarter wave stinger or something outside their car, it's a sure bet that you're going to overload the front end of that receiver, because HTs are not designed to work with external antennas per se. They're primarily designed to work with the antenna that's issued to them, which most people call rubber duck antennas. And they don't like the performance of those antennas, but they're purposely attenuated as to assist the front end of the HT not to be overloaded. Once you put a gain antenna on an HT, you're asking for overload condition on that HT's front end. And that's just what I wanted to add. Back to net.
Very good. Thank you for your comments, Ken. Okay. Greg, any rebuttal, further questions, whatever? Go ahead.
Not specifically, other than to say thank you. I didn't know that. And the intent was eventually to take the HT out of the car and put a mobile rig in there, but, you know, you got to do baby steps first. That's a good point. However, so maybe the right terminology is you have, I guess in the Kenwood vernacular, you have a code or tone and open versus a code or tone and code or tone. The way the Kenwood works is there's tone, there's CTCSS, there's DCS, and then there's DCS slash open. When I set the HT to CTCSS, and actually when I set my mobile to CTCSS, I have another Kenwood mobile, a TM V71A, it solves all of the problems of getting spurious receptions on the receive, on the repeater receive frequency, because it's not getting the tones. So, interesting point on the antennas. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks or so, I'll actually be changing that and putting a mobile rig in the car. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, very good. Anybody else want to comment on this topic before we move on? This is K2EIR with the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club TechNet. Ed Bruce.
Yeah, just first.
N2VHC again.
To intermods. Some of them are subject to front-end overload. I've hooked up tons of HTs to external antennas, including beams. Never had a problem on some HTs. On the other hand, you take a Bofang or some of the cheap Chinese imports, and they are subject to receiver overload. They are subject to cross-mod. They are subject to mixing products and all sorts of other spurious. They generate a few of their own signals, so you'll get flyers all over the place. Better quality radios won't have that problem. And going from a rubber duck to something like a quarter wave whip or even a gain antenna is only going to be, at most, a matter of an S unit or two. And that's not going to make a lot of difference at all on a modern HT.
Roger, Bruce. Thank you. This is K2EIR. We also heard from Ken. Ken, go ahead. N2CHZ from K2EIR.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more comment to the topic, and that is with the CTCS. I've never used digital coded squelch at DCS. I never had a reason to use it yet. I'm in a rural area, and my repeater doesn't use any. I don't use any tone. But I've used CTCSS for many, many years when I lived in your area, and I wanted to have communications with somebody that was on the fringe, or let's say on my threshold of my squelch. What we would do is we would set the CTCSS to a common frequency, for example, 123.0, and we would be able to, because there was no squelch threshold per se to overcome, we would have greater distance in simplex communications, because even we would come in below the squelch threshold, even with the noise, you could hear the other signal. It was like having no squelch, as per se, as we know, on at all. But because of the tone, the radio stayed silent until the other station called me. I would hear static, and I would hear his call sign in the static, which worked very well. It extended the range of the HTs many, many miles. I used to talk from Carlstadt, New Jersey, to Lyndhurst, New Jersey, no problem. And then down to Newark, no problem, from Carlstadt, with an HT in that technique. When we had used a normal squelch technique with a threshold, it was impossible to do that on simplex most of the time. And that's all I have to say. Back to that.
Very good tip, Ken. Thanks. Yes, often tone squelch is more sensitive than noise squelch. Of course, it always varies with the rig, but I would say that's generally true in my experience. Okay, anybody else on this topic before we go on? K2EIR. Being heard. Okay, I know the hour grows late. Let's see if we can get everybody who listed a question a chance and hopefully get them an answer. Walter, you're next on the list, KC2WDJ. I promised you could ask your question, so please go right ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. My name is Walter. I'm from Marchburg. I just had a quick question. I have a bunch of, call them dinosaur boat anchor two radios here, and I'm looking up. I wanted to know, as far as placing the capacitors in them, if there is any anything other than, I guess, voltage and capacitance that needs a modern equivalent compatible, you know. And also, as far as the capacitors for the power supplies, I kind of daisy chain all their capacitors together to meet the values for those.
Well, that's a very good question, and it doesn't have quite a simple answer, I'm sure. Would anyone like to respond to Walter about replacing electrolytics, in particular in older radios? That is the question, isn't it, Walter?
It is.
Okay, so I'm open for people with answers. This is K2EIR.
Ooh, I think I have an answer.
Okay, we got Rich PDQ. Let me just make sure if there's anyone else. I form a little list. Is there anybody else who wants to get on the list of answers?
W2JEK.
Okay,
J-E-K, P-D-Q. Anyone else on the list? Okay, well, that's a good start. Rich?